helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. I often talk about our need to educate those in state governments that they are not vassals of the federal government. When the states remember that they created the federal government, not the other way around, we can expect a restoration of the proper power balance between the two. I think this would be a good time to look at some recent news coming out of the states and just see how they're doing. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution, teach rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, I like talking about states' rights, states' powers, whatever term you like to use for it, but I think we need to take a look and see how they're doing every so often. Remind ourselves that there's a lot of work to be done. It's not all going to be done at once. And just as we are supposed to keep an eye on our representatives of the federal government, we really need to keep an eye on our representatives in the state and local governments as well. Before we get there, though, there's another piece of news I think we should discuss and be aware of. And I'll give you my two cents because, well, that's why I'm here, and I'm assuming that's why you're here as well. And that's the recent controversy over President Biden's announcements over Easter, his proclamations. So there are really two things I've heard talk about lately. The first was the question of no religious symbols on the Easter eggs that were made at the White House. This has been going on for a while, and we really shouldn't be surprised, but it tells us a lot about our government and our basic understanding of Easter. In fact, I was preaching last Sunday on Good Friday and talking about how, you know, to many people, Easter has been turned into eggs and bunnies. That's why I try to refer to it as Resurrection Sunday, because, well, that's what's being celebrated. Now, the fact that our government has not only lost sight of the fact that Easter or Resurrection Sunday is a religious holiday, not a government holiday, really shouldn't surprise us. The fact that they've turned this religious holiday, the celebration, into something anti-religious, well, to me, just tells me more about the degradation of character that's become so much a part of our society. You know, the idea of I can't even be exposed to an idea that I don't like is anathema to liberty and freedom. And the very idea that you can have kids coming in doing Easter eggs, but heaven forbid you put a cross or some other Christian symbol on it because, well, somebody may be offended. Of course, nobody seems to be worried about offending the Christians, but more on that in a minute. Because the other big thing was the Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, as I understand it, March 31st has been designated the Transgender Day of Visibility several years ago. It's just, it happened to fall on Easter. So, yes, I mean, it wasn't that Joe Biden picked out Easter as a time to announce this. This has been going on for several years. It again shows me how this idea of we have to bring attention to everything that's different, right? We've got Black History Month, Gay Pride Week. I think secretaries get a day, mothers get a day, fathers get a day, but you know, hey. We have all this. So the latest is transgender. And again, it is a move made, in this case, by government actors to shove this idea of transgenderism down our throat, that it's not the mental disorder that it is. Oh, no, no. We need to make it visible. See, it's the idea of exposure. If you're terrified of something, if you're paranoid about something, one of the possible treatments is exposure therapy. So if you're afraid of heights, you go up to high places and you slowly expose yourself to heights to desensitize yourself to it. To me, that's what the Transgender Day of Visibility is all about. It's what these pronouns are all about. It's about not gently bringing people into a thing to deal with a and then what I would consider a rational misunderstanding, but it's shock therapy. It's let's just shove this right in your face until you just back down and don't deal with it anymore. That's maybe why the Transgender Day of Visibility announcement was much, much longer than the Easter Sunday proclamation. Because although Joe Biden claims to be a Roman Catholic and has for many, many decades, well, I want to remind him of a simple teaching by Jesus that says, you shall know them by your fruit. And Mr. Biden, your fruit is not Catholic and it's not Christian. You can walk around with whatever label you want, but when you're focusing on the Transgender Day of Visibility, you are reminding the American people that you're not really interested in Roman Catholic doctrine. In fact, I heard a term for it I hadn't heard before, the cafeteria Catholic. You know, the Catholic that walks in and looks at all the Catholic teachings and Catholic doctrines and says, I'll take this one and this one and this one, and I'm going to ignore the rest. I'm not a Roman Catholic. But we have something similar in really all veins of Christianity, all denominations, where you have people that accept and defend certain ideas and practices out of the Bible, and you have others, not so much. We're gonna kind of downplay those things that we don't like very much. It's one of the reasons why I refer to myself as a disciple of Christ, because from my standpoint, what he says goes. Whether I like it or not, whether people like me for it or not, doesn't matter. Those are the standards. Now, I'm not saying how anyone else should live their life. Those are your decisions. But I think the focus on the Transgender Day of Visibility is one more example of Mr. Biden being anti-Roman Catholic. Okay, so let's get to the stage. We're going to spend some time in my adopted home state of Tennessee. Go Volunteers. So there's a piece of legislation in the General Assembly that, like a lot of things, right? Some good news, some bad news. The claimed purpose of this legislation, yes, there is a Senate a companion bill, is to prevent debanking, right? It's the summary states that it would require financial institutions and insurers to make determinations about the provision or denial of services based on an analysis of risk factors unique to each current or prospective customer, and prohibits financial institutions and insurers from denying or canceling services to a person or otherwise discriminating against a person based upon the use of social credit score or other factors. Right, that's the summary. I took a look at the legislation a little closer. Yeah, I would say that's generally the point, right? It's going to add section 45-1-128, talking about financial institutions. They're talking about state or national banks, savings and loans, savings banks, credit unions, industrial loan and thrift companies, and mortgage lenders. And it says, financial institutions shall make determinations about the provision or denial of services based on an analysis of risk factors unique to each current or prospective customer and shall not engage in a practice described in subsection C. Subsection C says a financial institution shall not deny or cancel its services to a person or otherwise discriminate against a person in making available such services or in the terms or conditions of such services on the basis of a person's political opinions, speech, or affiliations, except as provided in subsection B, the person's religious beliefs, religious exercise, or religious affiliations. Any factor, if it is not quantitative, impartial, and risk-based standard, including any such factor related to the person's business sector, or the use of a rating, scoring, analysis, tabulation, or action that considers a social credit score. Now, they go into details about the social credit score and what it is. I don't want to spend too much time on it to get you too bored of what's going on. But the idea is to prevent what's been seen in China. And a lot of some, I believe, what we've been seeing with the ESG move, and that is the use of or debanking people or stopping to do business with them because of they're gun manufacturers. or it's a pro-life organization, or you know, whatever. Now, the two things I want to note in here. One is that point back in subsection B, where it says this subsection does not restrict a financial institution that claims a religious purpose from making such determinations based on the current or prospective customer's religious beliefs, religious exercise, or religious affiliations. So there does appear to be a decent religious exception made. So if you are, let's say you're a Baptist association that has a credit union, or you're a denomination that has a some other, you know, retirement package or other financial institution, they can require people to consider a person's religious beliefs, exercise, or religious affiliations. In other words, if you're a Lutheran and you want to work with this Lutheran institution or program, they can require that you be actually a member of the Lutheran Church, would be how I read this. Now, the rest of it, again, makes, to me, this makes sense. This deals with the attempt to remove people from polite society for what they believe, right? They specifically point to political opinions, speech, or affiliations, where we have seen organizations that have are no longer being serviced by credit card processors and others being pro-life or being MAGA or anything like that. What's interesting is in the list of financial institutions, they do not list credit card processing companies. So that might be an interesting amendment to consider. I don't know. But what I see here is a state that looked at a situation and said, we need to protect our people. Now, again, I haven't done a deep dive into this legislation, right? I'm sure there's more in here. The only other thing that really caught my attention is how do they define a social credit score? I mean, we know how it's been defined in China. Do they define it here? Now, I haven't seen it, but then again, there may be amendments to this legislation that include such information. Again, I don't know. On the one hand, you know, I kind of like the idea of, hey, do we really want people to lose their banking because of what they think or what they believe? But on the other hand, do I really want the government telling private businesses, you cannot do business? Let me give you an example. So let's say you've got I don't want to do that. My first thought, it looks too religious. All right, let's say that you run, and I'm trying to think of a business that's not religious-based because there's specific religious exemptions. Okay, well, let's say, you know, we've talked before about pro-life organizations. Let's say you decide to run a pro-life bank, you know, and you only want to do business with pro-life, other pro-life businesses, right? You don't want to be a financial institution for an abortion facility. Well, unless you say that it's on a religious belief purpose, which might be a little difficult to state, then under this law, you could not you could not deny the service Planned Parenthood, even though you're pro-life. You see the point I'm getting to? You know, let's say you're in, a lot of people say, well, we don't want to see these people debanking gun stores. Well, again, if you are a rabidly anti-gun individual and you start and you're part of a credit union, or you start a financial institution, maybe you're a business manager or, you know, somebody that's doing financial advice, and you say, you know, hey, we don't like guns. We're pacifists. Can we turn around and say, you have to do business with gun stores, even though that violates your your opinions, your beliefs, whether they be political or other affiliations? Or what if, say, you want to support veterans and first responders, and you require someone to be a veteran or a member of police or fire or an EMT in order to become part of your organization? Does that mean you can't because that's a political opinion? I don't know. That's one of the things where it's still in progress. I think it still needs some work, and it's something I'm going to keep an eye on. Now, there's more going on in Tennessee, but before I go there, I have to take a break. And since we're talking about veterans and first responders, Patriot Mobile honors the heroes that are among us. They support our veterans, they support our first responders, and they give back to these communities. So join them. And Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They offer the very best nationwide 4G and 5G coverage on all the major networks. Their US-based support is top-notch. Switch to Patriot Mobile now and get free activation with offer code CONSTITUTION. Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution. Be sure to use that code CONSTITUTION when you check out to get free activation. Also, please check out HealRight. When I first was introduced to these, I was a little confused. See, they talk about that up to 87% of Americans have some sort of metabolic dysfunction, things like high cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, weight problems that are caused by these things, but they have a way of fixing that. Taking 15 years of research, they can reset your metabolic system without dealing with medications. See, there's these little snacks. They're not meal replacements. They're not, they're again, it's a snack. You get to the afternoon, you want a little snack, something to take the hunger pangs off, and it gives you 20 essential micronutrients, proteins, and antioxidants designed to help fix and reorganize your metabolic system, again, with these little travel tasty treats. Now, go to HealRight today, go to healright.com, and be sure to use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your first purchase. You can find out more also through americaoutloud.shop. Again, check out these HealRight products. They've got multiple flavors. You can get the flavor you want. You can get variety packs. I use them, and they're a great little snack and give you vitamins along the way. But be sure to use that code OUTLOUD when you check out to get 20% off your first purchase.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, HealthyCell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And HealthyCell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel and be our very best. Our customers will tell you how our products have made a difference for them. From improving immune health, regulating hormone balance, supporting gut health, to soothing the skin, even reducing the appearance of wrinkles, fine lines, and cellulite. and providing targeted support for mind, mood, energy, and even our body's own production of collagen. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in becoming your best self and fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're taking a look at the state of the states. What's going on in the states to help protect our rights and liberty, to realize that the states aren't simply vassals of the federal government, and what can we do then to support them? Now, I left off the last segment talking about a bill in Tennessee dealing with debanking, and I think it still needs some work, but I think they've got the right idea. Here's another one that I find interesting. It has to do with vaccines. So I've been hearing disturbing information of plans to make vaccines that spread all by themselves, meaning you have no ability to opt out. One of the issues with the mRNA vaccines, supposed vaccines for COVID, was that they shed. Now, what they shed was primarily the spike protein, which, of course, you could then be exposed to, and, well, hopefully your body would respond to it properly. But what happens when that's not an accident? What happens when that becomes a feature? When the idea is you give a small group of people a vaccine and it spreads from them kind of like a disease would. Well, then if you have issues with the vaccine, whether they be moral or medical, how do you avoid that? How do you have informed consent when you're not even informed that you've been given the vaccine because it spread from somebody else? Who knows, maybe two or three generations away. And of course, who knows what the pressure will be on the vaccines to mutate and cause further damage. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see there are some serious questions here. But the other way I've heard of this coming about is not self-spreading vaccines, but actually putting the vaccines in the food. Imagine getting, you pick up your groceries and you go home and you make yourself a nice meal, not realizing that you've just vaccinated yourself because the vaccine was in the meal. It was in the food. Well, Tennessee's doing something about it. They have what they call vaccine lettuce. See, that's what they're calling food that has the vaccine or the antibody producing material in it already. And there's a bill in both the General Assembly and in the companion bill in the Senate that the summary of the House, the General Assembly bill is defines that food that contains a vaccine or vaccine material as a drug for the purposes of the Tennessee Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. In other words, if they attempt to put vaccine products, or anything like that, in the food, it's now considered a drug. It would be considered a drug under Tennessee law. And this bill is extremely short. It amends section 53-1-102.14 of the Tennessee Code annotated to say drug also means food that contains a vaccine or vaccine materials. Vaccine or vaccine materials means a substance intended for use in humans to stimulate the production of antibodies and provide immunity against disease prepared from the causative agent of a disease, its products, or a synthetic substitute treated to act as an antigen without inducing the disease that is authorized or approved by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Okay, so problem number one is, why the heck are you depending on the Food and Drug Administration? The FDA does not legally exist. Regulating food, regulating drugs is not a power delegated to the United States. Therefore, the United States doesn't have it. They couch it under the Commerce Clause. They aren't regulating the commerce. They're regulating the product. So let's just forget the Food and Drug. I know why they put it in there, but as far as I'm concerned, that's bupkis. The point is, any material that is intended to generate antibodies to provide immunity against disease is a vaccine or vaccine material. And if you put it in food, then that is considered a drug. Just like, ibuprofen, morphine. Think of all the drugs we have. Now it falls under drug, which means it must be treated as such. Again, this is extremely important because, as with the self-spreading viruses, the self-spreading vaccines, if it's in your food and you don't know it's there, you do not have informed consent. And if you don't have informed consent, you really can't consent, which means this is being done to you against your will. From a scientific standpoint, I understand it. It's a, you know, it's a problem to be solved. How do you get more people to take the vaccine? Here you go. You make it spread itself, or you put it in the food. As a legal and ethical problem, it's much more. It's the idea that you don't get a choice. We know better than you. You will take your vaccine whether you like it or not. And all of these people that have been, that were maligned over the last several years about the fake vaccine, you know, the people in the news that kept telling us spreaders, the talking heads that said we should not be treated in hospitals if you don't take the shot. All of them now have the ability to force you to take this drug, because all it means is that somebody has to manufacture a tomato, a head of lettuce, celery. I mean, heck, I'm in the South, okra, that has this vaccine material in it. And voila. Oh, you don't have to tell you. Oh, no, it's a drug. It has to be listed on the product label. This, to me, is important. And again, this is a state stepping up. I would like to see maybe a little bit more. Like I said, I'm not overly thrilled by, it's something that's been authorized or approved by the FDA. What if they didn't authorize it? Does that mean it's no longer vaccine material, so it's no longer a drug? Does that mean if all they do is say, because again, you got to remember, those jabs weren't truly authorized. They weren't approved by the Food and Drug Administration. They were released on an emergency use authorization. Does that mean they could put that stuff in our food and it wouldn't trigger this bill? Things to consider. These are the types of things we need to consider when we're looking at this type of legislation. So again, I look at this as a, you know what? It's a good start. I think it still needs some work. I think it could be better. But I like the way they're thinking of how do they protect us from people who are trying to bypass our informed consent. I wonder if other states are looking at this as well. Okay, let's switch to another T state. This time we're going to do Texas. Back in February of 2022, Governor Abbott signed a directive ordering the Department of Family and Protective Services to investigate parents who allowed their children claiming gender dysphoria to receive procedures like surgeries and chemical drugs to alter their sexual function, put it that way. Now, as you imagine, there was a lot of pushback from, well, the transgender family mafia, and a lot of the advocacy groups, and there was a lawsuit filed. Now, Judge Amy Meacham of Texas's 201st District County District Court placed a temporary injunction on the directive. In other words, that the Department of Family and Protective Services could not investigate parents of children who were having their bodies surgically or chemically altered. Now, the state attorney general office lodged a complaint at the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, arguing that child abuse investigations of parents who support such treatments could continue under the state law in question, until they determined the constitutionality of the directive. Well, here we are, God knows how long later. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the temporary injunction against the department and its commissioner, preventing them from further investigating allegations of child abuse from genital mutilation, either physical or chemical. So where do we sit? Well, this is always going to be a touchy subject because you're dealing with two competing rights considerations. On the one hand, you have the rights of the parent to control the upbringing of their child. However, when does that move into harming the child? And that's really the consideration. Now, again, if these were temporary measures that had no long-term lasting effects, I think I would come down with those who oppose it and with the courts that put an injunction against these investigations. However, we're not dealing with temporary treatments. We're dealing with lifelong changes to the child. The child is not old enough to consent to these. And let's face it, if a parent were mutilating any other part of the body, do you think there would be such a pushback against those who wish to have this investigated for child abuse? I don't have the details of the directive. I don't know if it was immediately assumed to be child abuse or simply an investigation into the possibility of child abuse. But again, this is, you know, we tend to get so wrapped around the axle when it comes to questions of sex. If we remove sex from the equation, what if somebody was, mutilating a child's arm in order to make them a better ball player? I remember when my sister was young, doctors actually recommended spinal surgery because they thought she was going to be too tall. You know, you have those standard percentiles. If the child's this tall at this age, they're probably going to be too, they thought she'd be too tall for a girl. And a doctor actually recommended surgery. Now my parents said, no, you're nuts. We're not doing that. But what if we were to do that today? If a parent, let's say a dwarf, someone suffering from dwarfism, wanted to perform surgery on their child to prevent them from being too tall, we wouldn't question the idea of child abuse. But suddenly, because it deals with sex, we're supposed to throw all logic and reason out the window and allow parents to have their child physically or chemically, surgically or chemically mutilated to deal with the lifelong impact of such decisions and not do anything about it. These are two really conflicting situations. Because on the one hand, I agree with parental rights. But I'm sorry, when the parental rights involve physically harming the child, I have to go with the state has a duty to step in and do something about this. I mean, there has to be a point at which we recognize that parents can be wrong. And we don't allow them to harm children. Again, I've told the story before. When we moved to New York City, upstate, the very first year there, I met a friend. I made a friend. He was a boy who was in foster care. Now, it wasn't because his parents were abusive. It's that his mother, because he was in custody of his mother, was not able to care for him properly, and the state took him away from his mother and placed him with a foster family. I remember after a few years, he was back with his mother again. And didn't take that more than a few months. And the state took him away a second time and put him with a different family. It's a terrible situation to be in. I don't want that idea. But the idea of a parent voluntarily, I can't say allowing, right? Because you're supposed to be the parent. It's not a question of, well, they've made up their mind. No, they're too young to make up their mind. They cannot consent by law under 18. They cannot consent. But you're saying, you know, to anything. You're saying they can consent to making permanent biological changes to their body. It really is sad that there are parents that will put us in those positions. Now, I hope that I'm correct when I say the number of parents that would do that is extremely small, but it's going to happen. And I have to wonder when I'm looking at these judges that are putting injunctions against this, whose best interest do you have in mind? Because I can't see it being the best interest of the child. I mean, first of all the hysteria that these children will commit suicide if they're not allowed to disfigure themselves, well, it's not supported by science. It's sort of by it's hysteria. But even from that standpoint, if the choice is between, you're telling me the only choice you have is mutilation or suicide, then the child needs mental help. What are we doing here? Now, again, this is not over, right? The court hasn't made a decision on the constitutionality of the governor's directive. But between now and when the decision's finally made, are you really willing to allow children to be mutilated chemically or surgically? Until the court decides whether or not that constitutes child abuse. Like I said, if all you do is take the sex out of it, forget transgender. If a parent allows or encourages a child to be mutilated surgically or chemically, is that not child abuse? I don't know. But before I go on, I know I do have to take a break. Before I go though, if you're trying to figure out what to do next in your Constitution studies, I've created the Constitution Study Planning Wizard. Just go to constitutionstudy.com/wizard, answer a few questions. I do need your name and email. Answer a few questions, and the system will start generating emails with ideas, things you may try to help encourage and increase and improve your Constitution studies. I also hope that you'll swing by AmericaOutloud.news. It's a great place to visit to get news and information. I go there every day, but I want you to do something. Do me a favor, find something, a story, an article, a video, a podcast, something that is important to you, and share it. Share it with family, share it with friends, share it on social media. I don't care. I want you to share because it's the act of sharing that helps you and the rest of us secure the blessings of liberty.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Lean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's the perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. You know, we're talking today about the state of the states. And one of the greatest things the framers of the Constitution did was set up the federalist system. Now, don't get confused. You know, some people think federalism is the federal government is supreme. That's not true. See, federalism, to federate, is to take multiple peers and have them work together. So you have the opportunity for these multiple republics to try different things and hopefully learn from each other. Sadly, in many places, federalism is dying, not because it doesn't work, but because, well, people don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Take, for example, California, or Commifornia, as I like to call it. Now, let me tell you a little story here. There's a gentleman here, a Michael Ojeda, and he's a delivery man for Pizza Hut up in California. Now, he made money. He supported his family. He was quite happy. He said that Pizza Hut was my career for nearly a decade. And for the most part, no notice was taken. Well, you see, then he got a letter from the franchise informing him that he was being terminated. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there, oh, that dirty, rotten corporation, Pizza Hut. No, he wasn't terminated because Pizza Hut was being mean. He was terminated because the government in California is stupid. See, they recently raised the minimum wage for fast food workers to $20 an hour. It started April 1st. This has got to be one of the worst April Fool's jokes the California government has pulled on its people in my lifetime. And this is a perfect example of federalism, right? Because you have other states around California says, we're going to charge minimum wage of 15. Now, minimum wages are illegal to begin with. Right? They violate the basic law. They deprive someone of liberty and property without due process of law. You're basically telling an employer, it doesn't matter how much value you receive from that employee, you have to pay them at least this much. We don't look at it this way. See, it's interesting. All the people that were cheering for $20 minimum wage for a burger flipper or someone taking orders at the counter and people delivering food. Guess what happened? They got put out of a job because the people that came up with this $20 minimum wage nonsense only looked at one side of the equation. They said, hey, if you're making $15 an hour and you're not making it, how about you make $20 an hour? They never considered the other side of the equation. See, if you're an employer, and you have to pay $20 an hour. By the way, that doesn't mean the employee has to do $20 worth of work. He doesn't have to bring in $20 worth of revenue to pay for that. It means more like he or she needs to bring in $60 to $80 worth of income to cover that $20 an hour. In other words, if you are a fast food worker and you want $20 an hour and you don't make and you don't generate $80 an hour in profit, then you cost the business money. It's actually cheaper to fire you because you take the whole cost together and it's actually a benefit to them. Well, then who's going to deliver the pizza? I don't know. Grubhub, DoorDash, any one of these other companies that will deliver the food for a fraction of the cost. In fact, they even get the customer to pay for delivering the food. So I can pay Mr. Ojeda $20 an hour and not make that money back, or I can simply hand it off to somebody else. I was on the road for a few days, a few weeks ago, and I stopped at a fast food joint. One of the terrible things about being on the road is it's just too easy to chow down on fast food. And what I found amazing was how little I had to interact with people. So I could show up and I could go to a kiosk. If I didn't walk up to a person and place my order like I used to, I went up to a kiosk and I keyed in my order, and then somebody eventually called my number and handed me a bag of food. In a lot of places, you don't even have to go to the kiosk. You just do it right on your phone, right? You're driving up. I've done this at places where you place your order, you drive up, you show them that you've placed the order, you will go around to the drive-thru, they hand you a bag of food, and you're off to the races. Why do businesses do that? It's not because they're mean. It's not because, I mean, some of them maybe it's because they're mean, but most of it's because it's too expensive to hire an employee to do it. Decades ago, when I was one of my early jobs, I remember I was making about $7-8 an hour, and I was talking to the boss, and he was doing some budgeting. He said, "Look at this," and he showed me the calculations of what my, we'll call it an $8 an hour job, what it actually cost him to give me $8 for an hour's worth of work. It was $25. That was, again, back in probably the early 90s, right? 91, 92. Do you think it's gotten any better? So California's tried this experiment. And, oh, by the way, Mr. Ojeda, he's not alone. Hundreds, thousands of workers are losing their jobs because California told their employers that you have to pay them more than they're worth. Then I'll find another way. I can lose $5-8 an hour on this employee every hour they work, or I can spend a few thousand dollars and I can get a kiosk that does all the work, and I don't have to give them sick time, and I don't have to deal with scheduling and people not showing up. I just plug it in and it works. So you look at California, California still hasn't learned anything about reality. Remember that next time you walk into a fast food joint and you're punching at a kiosk rather than talking to a person, remember California and their $20. And again, regardless of where you are, because the point of these types of jobs, where they were meant to be entry-level jobs. The fact that Mr. Ojeda saw his pizza delivery, his fast food delivery thing as a career, okay, that's for him. That's not what it's designed to be. It was designed to be those early jobs where you learn the basics, showing up on time, doing what you're told, doing the job right, dealing with customers. You learn these things to take them on to other jobs and other careers. We've lost that whole concept. And because of that, you wonder why you go to a store and you hand somebody cash and they can't make change without the computer telling them. Part of it is because that's not a skill that's learned anymore, either in school or in these jobs. Now, there's an interesting thing going on right now. I think it started in Chicago, where the Illinois has filed a lawsuit against Glock. And now a bunch of other states are joining in, and they've notified Glock that they need to preserve 37 years worth of documentation regarding its handguns because of this lawsuit. Now, what is this lawsuit about? Well, the lawsuit claims that the Glock didn't change the design of their pistol once they knew that there was a do-it-yourself, quote, switch that could make a handgun a machine gun. That's their words for it. That because you know there was this do-it-yourself switch that could make a handgun a machine gun, that was the proliferation of illegal machine guns. Now, there's a couple interesting things in here. I do not know how difficult it is, because the last I knew, it wasn't so much a switch. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but from what I understand, what you're doing is you have to replace the trigger, because you have to replace what's called the sear, the device that controls the actual firing of the firearm. Do it yourself, maybe. I have to admit, I've never actually changed the trigger in my Glock. I know it's not, you know, it doesn't require machine tools, but I don't know exactly how difficult it is. But here's what's interesting, and I'm going to read you from the complaint. It says, due to the susceptibility of Glock pistols to modification and Glock's refusal to correct the problem, anyone with $20 to $25 to spare and a desire to circumvent long-standing federal and state prohibitions on possessing fully automatic machine guns can do so by buying an auto sear and affixing it to a Glock pistol. Okay, stop for just a second. So you're admitting that the firearm itself is legal, that is the person modifying the firearm that is breaking state and federal law. And when they talk about affixing an auto sear, again, it's not something you stick on the back. You have to open up the gun. I believe you actually have to remove the trigger and trigger assembly and either swap it out or swap a part out of it. Again, is it super difficult? Does it require the manufacturer to do it? No. But why are you punishing Glock for creating a perfectly legitimate legal pistol? Because there are people that want to get around state and federal law. The answer is simple. In my mind, the answer is simple. They hate guns. Because tyrants hate that there's an armed populace. I contend that the state and federal laws prohibiting fully automatic firearms are unconstitutional and therefore void, because they infringe on your right to keep and bear arms. And yes, they may be scary and dangerous, but they're there so that the states can remain free, meaning that the people can defend themselves against hostile governments, foreign or domestic. That's why we have militias. In fact, I got an article coming out later this month where I talk about, the battles of Lexington and Concord, which were fought because of gun control. The trigger that set off the shooting war for independence was the legitimate government of the colonies confiscating the tools for the citizens, or in this case the colonists, to defend themselves against an out of control government. See, some states, again, they don't like it. Again, I was born and raised in New York. I actually had a carry permit in New York. I remember what I had to go through to get it. It's crazy. But I know tyrants don't like it when their citizens are armed. And again, it's not just the anti-gun states. Here I am in Tennessee. Tennessee, much better state gun-wise. It's interesting though. In Tennessee, if you see that sign, you know, the sign with a pistol with a red circle and slash in it, it is a crime to walk past that sign armed. Now, there was legislation submitted to our legislature that would turn that into a non-criminal penalty. Meaning, if you walked past that and the property owner realized or found out that you were armed, they asked you to leave. If you refused to leave, you would be cited for trespass. Now, personally, I like that because I hate organizations that don't want me to be able to protect myself. I've had this conversation with businesses here in my town. You put those signs up, you're telling me you don't want me because you don't care about my safety. And everyone, when I brought it up, said, yes, we do. That's why we put up the sign. The sign doesn't protect me from squat. All the sign does is mean either I break the law or I don't do business with you. Because you're telling me that sign's not going to stop anybody with criminal intent. All it does is stop me. And if that's the way you want to do business, I'll find one of your competitors that doesn't hate my right to protect myself, and I'll do business with them. So that's the beauty of federalism. When New York State got too much to deal with, I went to a free state. I left the empire for the volunteer state, for the free state of Tennessee. And boy, am I happy I did so. And if you look at the numbers, there are a lot of people leaving these Marxist, Leninist, collectivist states and heading for freer states. I think that's a good thing. Hopefully, I only hope that these collectivist communist states see what's happening and learn from it rather than just trying to inflict their communism on the rest of the country. Before I go, I want to let you know the live events for General Flynn's movie, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, they're starting to happen. So if you want to find out where they are, maybe attend one of in your city, go to constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie, FLYNNMOVIE. That'll send you to their website. And I ask you to follow the link because it lets them know that you come from the Constitution Study. And that's kind of a little nice give back that you have here. But you can find out more about the tickets, the live events, the streaming, even pre-purchasing the DVDs, all there. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie, FLYNNMOVIE. Now, I also hope you'll spread the word about the Constitution Study. Let people know they can listen at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen via podcast. It's available on your favorite podcast app, but the episodes on podcast generally a day or two after they're on talk radio, but it's the very same content. But do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave the episodes ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the Constitution Study, which I hope people do, and I hope you want people to find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at americaoutloud.news. But as I keep telling you, knowledge is not power until it is put into action. So you've heard the Constitution Study. You know where to find it. Now it's time to share. Let friends and family know, post it on social media, do whatever you can to share this information, because by doing so, you're helping to share the blessings of liberty.